As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
So, that was the year that was. We've ground to a halt somewhat, haven't we, with the latest wave of COVID causing havoc across the Premier League's festive schedule. But we're in a reflective mood here at Talk of the Devils, and we're going to have a look back over a mad 12 months in Manchester. So from Ronaldo to Rangnick, and from Gdansk to Bergamo, this is our take on 2021. This is Talk of the Devils, a Manchester United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. I'm Ian Irving, and here with us, as always, are the United correspondent for The Athletic, Laurie Whitwell, and United We Stand editor, and also contributor to The Athletic, of course, as well, Andy Mitten. Hello, fellas. It's been a while since Manchester United have kicked a football, unfortunately, hasn't it? Andy, what have you been doing to fill your time?
I spent the weekend writing for The Athletic and editing United We Stand. I put a 14-hour shift in United We Stand on Sunday. And on my birthday, obviously, turned 24. And
again? Wow.
I celebrated with celebrated with a cup of tea. So that was my adventurous weekend.
I'll talk to you about United We Stand in a minute, Andy, actually, if that's all right. Laurie, what have you been up to? Because you've not just had sort of breaks from watching Manchester United play football. You've had breaks from writing about Manchester United play football as well. Charming.
I know, I've sort of timed it. I don't know whether it's a good thing to have a few days holiday when there's nothing going on, or whether it's a bad thing, you know, like, okay, I'm not missing out on anything, but equally...
The bosses aren't listening, you're safe, it's fine.
Yeah, I could have been working and, you know, equally, you know, managed to avoid doing too much writing. But no, it was, it's good, yeah. Went out in Manchester, went to the Christmas markets for the first time this season as posted on Instagram, Step Into Christmas, favourite Christmas song, obviously. Had a nice time, but yeah. I'm sorry, Andy, mate. I wish I'd had you over. We could have had some nice glühwein together and, you know, celebrated your birthday properly.
We'll do it. And I think you were pretty fortunate in that the games were postponed. Remember Stuart Matheson, who covered Manchester United for the Evening News? He's like a really diligent journalist. And every time he took a week off, something major happened, like Sir Alex Ferguson stepped aside.
Well, I remember Simon Peach was on holiday. He works with Press Association. He went on holiday to New York for a week or two. When Solskjaer got sacked, Ranieri gets appointed, comes back and goes, anything happen, lads?
It was nice there, Andy, as well. You got an invite to the Christmas markets if you were over here. I'm over here. No invite. So anyway, let's talk about United We Stand. Andy, I've been sort of looking at your social media, actually, and there is obviously a serious side to United not playing, and that's the outbreak of coronavirus. But obviously there's a much bigger knock-on effect to a lot of people for a lot of reasons, none more so than yourself and the fanzine, really.
Yeah, well, we produce a printed mag, which we sell outside the ground to football fans. And if there's no games and there's no fans, we can't do that. So I was just very honest with readers and said, we're printing this mag and we're finishing it off. And it's our best issue of the season. There's so much talent in United's fan base. And we're uncertain. And I'm still uncertain. And I just wanted to explain the reality that I can't say to the printers, look, we can't pay you this month, but the front cover got loads of likes on social media. This is the real world. And I did that video, and I'm pleased that loads of people subscribed. And we need that. You know, we've got to pay for things with something called money, including the printers who are working hard. And I'm not having people working on the mag all weekend for absolutely nothing. I don't think anyone does it for monetary reasons, but we're printing it, and hopefully we'll be able to sell it at the Burnley game or the Wolves game or the Villa game, or I'll take some copies up to Newcastle away. But there's definitely been shifts in demographics where people come up to us at the ground and say, I love your front covers, love the podcast, which is really nice, but support what we do as well. And I'm pleased that a lot of people did that. And as I said in that video, I don't have any magic answers here. I don't know what's going to happen, but the copies are being printed as we speak, and they'll be arriving in Manchester. The lads will be ready to sell them. They use the money to follow Manchester United. And anyone who's subscribed and supported us, thank you very much. Got no happy ending with this, mate. I don't know where he's going.
No, absolutely. Well, if you want to support Andy and the fanzine, of course, have a look at Andy's social media. There's lots of links there, and you'll also get an opportunity to see the front cover as well, which is fantastic. I won't explain it completely, but it's Fred again and again and again and again. Some quite interesting hairstyles. I've spoilt it almost. I've teased you. I don't know. Anyway, you mentioned there about not having matches to sell the fanzines at. We're hoping that, well, across the sort of festive period, there will be some games for Manchester United and other Premier League teams. Of course, the schedule absolutely decimated across the weekend, including United's game at home to Brighton being called off, obviously the same as the Brentford match. Laurie, do you know what the status of the club is in at the minute after this outbreak? Of course, we know that the Premier League is speaking, probably about now actually. We're recording late morning on Monday to sort of formulate some sort of plan for the following game weeks and weeks ahead, really. What's the status at United, Laurie?
Don't know the exact numbers of people that are testing positive still or that are out of quarantine for whatever reasons they might have. But, you know, I think the fact that they want to get these games going, it's not like they were keen to have either Brentford or Brighton postponed. They felt it was an absolute essential result because of the fact that the squad had been decimated. And, you know, the kind of the general rule is 14 players, I think, is what the Premier League would hope teams could still go with, you know, as long as there were sort of two goalkeepers in that, and United fell short of that. You know, it was, I think it was 9 players for Brentford and then 7 for Brighton that would have been available first team players. So you can see why, you know, the Premier League accepted United's request to postpone it. I think Brighton also had their own request in for that game, the more recent one. And then, you know, you have on the flip side, Chelsea sort of complaining that their request wasn't listened to. But then you look at their team and you think, well, that's not a bad team. You know, it's a pretty good team. Okay, you can maybe make a debate about Kovacic, you know, coming back from an injury and having to play. But I don't know, I kind of feel like if teams can get these games on, they should do. And it's just, you're going to have to accept that this is another sort of disjointed season where you're kind of going to have to roll with the punches a little bit and try and make the best of it as you can. It's going to be perhaps unfairness built into it just because this is a pandemic and coronavirus doesn't, you know, prescribe to a set way of doing things, and the fact that, you know, these fixtures are there in the diary, it doesn't really care. But yeah, there's currently talks going on because, you know, there's so many matches getting postponed. You know, I think anyone, you know, with fantasy football was tearing their hair out on Saturday when there was, you know, games going down to the wire.
I got 9 out in the end.
That's not great. That's good showing, Ian. I know we're quite close, actually.
And that's with Pep dropping or resting Phil Foden as well, unfortunately.
Well, you've always got the Pep conundrum, haven't you, with the random selections that he sometimes throws out. We're quite close, I think, aren't we, in the Athletic Fantasy Football League, me and you? I think you over...
Oh, we have not checked,
yeah,
actually.
I think you overtook me the other day.
Okay.
But right. But with obviously, that is a minor concern. The bigger picture is, you know, people's health and these matches going ahead. And with that in mind, the Premier League are having discussions as we speak about the story that Adam Crafton and David Ornstein broke yesterday in terms of having a postponement of a whole round of fixtures. So it wouldn't be these Boxing Day, or for United's case, the 27th fixture against Newcastle. It would be the 28th, 29th, 30th, where, you know, they've got Burnley at home. So I wouldn't be surprised if that gets passed, just because there's so many clubs, I think, now that are thinking this is going to be an issue for us, and if we can kind of just give it a bit of breathing room at this period right now. They've obviously then got further down the line when you're going to fit these fixtures in, but I think you can. There's probably a few free midweeks in the new year that you can have a look at, but we'll see what comes out of the meeting today.
Yeah, it's not necessarily just coronavirus issues. It's sort of the issues that are related to it as well, in that obviously over Christmas, the matches are so tightly packed in. Usually the big squads in the Premier League can cope, they can rotate, they can rest people if they need to, if players are struggling with niggles here and there. But obviously if there are players missing through COVID, then going into the next game, you're unable to rotate the team. Players are having to play matches very, very close together. And of course, that then increases the risk of injury and further problems then. And I guess, I suppose, they're just trying to create some sort of break that can sort of let everyone breathe a little bit and just be able to get through this period as best we can and find time in the new year to play the matches, which will be very, very difficult, of course, because it's a patched fixture list all the way through. But it's sort of got to a crisis point now, hasn't it? And something needs to be done. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. I suppose for United's perspective, Andy, now there's a week, even from this point, until Newcastle. So there's a good chance that by then, considering the protocols that have been in place, considering the extra testing that's been taking place at Carrington as well, by then they should be in a much better shape.
They should be, and it's still early days for Ralf Rangnick, and he's lost a couple more of his coaches. The players are getting used to the new people taking training. As time goes on, it allows injured players more time to come back. So there could be some benefits to this. Not that it seems like a time where we should be talking up the positives of it. I just want football to be being played. I wanted United to play at Brentford against Brighton. And in an ideal world, for the new manager to take advantage of quite an unforgiving fixture list, and that would include Newcastle away. Newcastle have been battered most recently by Manchester City, but United were relieved that the game against Brighton was called off. They really felt that the team would have been massively hampered if they'd had to put one out. So right at the start of Ralf Rangnick's reign, he mentioned a break between Brighton and Newcastle. And that's become an extended break. We don't know the intensity of the games after this. It's all new for him. And quite often, players and managers who come to England for the first time, they talk about the intensity of matches over the Christmas period. It's not looking so intense at the moment, but let's just see what's going to happen. And straight into January, I think United have got three games on a Monday afternoon. Monday afternoon, very fan-friendly as ever. And we'll be straight into the FA Cup, and before we know it, the Champions League will be kicking in. I just hope that games carry on, fans are allowed to watch those matches, because it makes such a huge difference. But if I'm sounding uncertain, I think it's because we all are. We just don't know what's going to happen.
There's no doubt about that at the minute, certainly. Keep your eyes peeled then on The Athletic for the very latest on this. Adam Crafton and David Ornstein have been leading from the front. There's lots of information there about the effect that COVID has already had on the Premier League. And of course, there'll be reports on there what comes out of the meeting as well. Laurie, it's quite interesting in a way, actually, that we've not heard from Ralf Rangnick on any of this situation, because, of course, he held his pre-Brentford press conference post-Norwich. And at that point, there was no sign of any issue for Manchester United. It was the next day where we first heard that there was a problem, that the training ground had been closed. So we don't really know his thoughts on any of this, do we? And how he feels it's affecting him and his start in England.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to know as well. I mean, I'm sure he's been very erudite and articulate since he's come to England. Since we've seen him anyway. He's obviously been that way for a number of years. But so I'd be intrigued to see how much he gives away, what he sort of says about it, because we've seen sort of different managers have different approaches, really, in terms of, I suppose, the players' vaccination status, which has kind of become a bit of a lightning rod for discussion, because, you know, you look at Jurgen Klopp and how sort of forthright he's been in his opinion on players getting vaccinated, you know, calling it a moral obligation. Thomas Tuchel has been perhaps a little bit less determined to kind of make his opinion clear on that, and kind of said it's, you know, people's choice and not really wanting to get into that debate too much. So, you know, two German coaches that have obviously had Ralf Rangnick as a, you know, saw some sort of mentor at their point. It'll be interesting to see what Ralf Rangnick has to say about it himself, whether he, you know, wants to talk about the status at Manchester United in particular, because that's something that's come under a little bit of scrutiny, with some sources telling us that actually the take-up rate at United isn't, you know, as good as it has been at other clubs. I think United would say that actually there's been significant players who have tested positive for coronavirus, who have been double jabbed, and clearly it's an ongoing process to try and, you know, I suppose, convince players perhaps who are clearly very particular about what they put into their bodies, you know, about the benefits of having a vaccination, double vaccination, not only for themselves, but also for the, you know, the teammates and perhaps the regulations around it. Because if, as you know, as we know, if you are not vaccinated and you come into close contact with somebody, you have to have a period of isolation. So that just takes you out of the reckoning for, you know, the next match and perhaps the next match after that. We've seen Joshua Kimmich in Germany, you know, at Bayern Munich. He wasn't vaccinated and he had to spend time in isolation. And then he also got his pay deducted because you know, of laws passed in Germany about that. So he's now changed his mind and he's going to get vaccinated. He's also had some, he's contracted COVID himself and had some problems with sort of water in the lungs, I think. So he's sort of changed his mind. So it's interesting. I'd really be fascinated to know how much Ralf Rangnick would, you know, give to us on that basis. I appreciate there's confidentiality issues, but at the same time, this is a, you know, a global pandemic, and perhaps all our the way through it as a country is with this process. So I'd be interested to see what he kind of says about all, really.
Yeah, Andy, are you similar?
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what he said. Jurgen Klopp was very forthright and cogent about it. People have got very strong opinions either way on this, and I'm agreeing with all the stuff that Laurie said about it. It's not clear cut. The example given that one Manchester United player had tested positive despite being double vacced. I know of another one who felt really rough last week and he tested negative on it. So it's not clear cut on this. And then you've got obviously privacy issues as well. I don't think any rules about being vaccinated would come from the football clubs. It'd have to come from government, but it's a massive social issue. It's just, it's much bigger than a football issue here. And we talked last week on the podcast about fans being having to prove that they had a COVID passport to get into matches. Again, that brings across all different kinds of opinions, and people have got pretty strong opinions on that one as well. So let's see what happens.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
So our hectic festive schedule has turned into a bit of a football wasteland, to be honest, but that does give us a chance to take stock of what's been a rollercoaster year. Of course, the ride took in second place in the Premier League after a bit of an up and down season for many reasons. Then, of course, United lost the Europa League final to Villarreal after the longest penalty shootout in living memory, I think. It certainly felt that way anyway, watching it. A raft of high quality signings arrived over the summer, which was nice, wasn't it, for a week or two. That pushed the expectations through the roof. And unfortunately, those expectations eventually led to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer being sacked after, well, a string of embarrassing defeats in the end. Then Michael Carrick, of course, was appointed on an interim basis while we found an interim. In that interim basis, he got us through to the knockout stage of the Champions League and got some great results in the Premier League as well. And then he left the club quite dramatically on the full-time whistle after his final match in interim charge. And Ralf Rangnick took over to take us forward. Managed a couple of matches before, obviously, the COVID outbreak at Manchester United. So it's been quite a year, really, hasn't it, when you put it like that, 2021. Laurie asked you guys at home for questions, for reflections on the year that's been for Manchester United on the real-time section of the Athletic app. We've not done this for a while, asked for questions, so we thought it was about time. And considering this is actually our last podcast of 2021, apart from a very special one later on in the week, we thought it was a good time to do it as well. More detail on that special podcast in a moment. But let's get to some of your questions. And this seems like a good place to start. James L. would love to know how you guys would rate the 2021 calendar year for Manchester United, good or bad. Maybe a score out of 10. Can I go first on this one? I'm going to give it 6.5 out of 10. Are we allowed to do halves?
I would like a half, yeah.
Yeah, because 7 feels bit too much and 6 feels a bit too low. It's been bad at times, certainly, but there's been some brilliant moments. I mean, I know that we want the team to be successful as possible, we want them to win trophies and things like that, but Raphael Varane walking out at Old Trafford before the game and that roar and the fans back inside and the optimism of a new season, and just not hearing that roar inside Old Trafford for such a long time, I think will stick with me forever. It even made me slightly emotional when we was there, because you just realise at that point how much you missed that feeling and the way your ears rang when a crowd cheers like that inside a football stadium. It's one of the reasons we all love going to the matches and we all love feeling and experiencing football. And it just was incredible. So for that alone, I'd probably give it about 4 or 5 points, to be fair. But at times, United have been pretty good as well. Ronaldo's come back. There's been some unbelievable comebacks along the way. A final and an awful penalty shootout in the end, unfortunately. A new manager now as well. But yeah, I think 6.5 out of 10. Andy, what would you go for?
I'd give it 6.6. Are we allowed to?
Yeah, do it. I've opened the floodgates now, haven't I?
I agree with a lot of the points that you made, and I mentioned some of my high and low points. One of my most surreal points was when I did that bike ride in September, I was gutted not to be at Old Trafford when Ronaldo came back, and I was listening on the radio while cycling, and I was goosed. I was absolutely exhausted, and I'm thinking, Old Trafford sounds so loud here. It sounds so loud, like as loud as I've ever heard it. And it was just, I wasn't there. I was listening on the radio. Normally, I would be there for it. So Ronaldo coming back, and this cyclist came past me and went, listening to the football. Yeah, I said, Ronaldo's back. And he said, is that important? I said, well, it is for Manchester United. And is that important? I said, well, in football, Manchester United are important. And is football important? And I felt like saying, well, it is to me, mate. And I was a bit...
Surprised you didn't kick him off his bike, Andy.
I did. I'm in court next week for it, mate. And, but I just didn't want to say that. Made me realise that not everyone loves football like we do.
No.
Sometimes we're in a bubble where so much of your life is with people who have opinions on football. So to meet people who actively dislike it, well, I remembered it quite clearly. That's why I'm talking about it now.
Yeah. Laurie, what would you give it?
Well, if you've gone 6.5 and Andy's gone 6.6, can I go 6.66? Like, you know,
recurring.
The devil's number, you know, the red devils and all that. I don't know. That's about the right mark, in it, because you can't give it a 7, because 7 implies success, doesn't it? And okay, Europa League final, that's not success, and you know, United have ended up sacking a manager. So yeah, but I touch on what you said, Ian. I agree that football for me is about moments and shared experiences, and there's been actually quite a few good ones like that, you know, probably because United have been bad in the first place, you know, the comebacks basically, Atalanta and Villarreal. Yeah, and you might say, well, they should be beating Atalanta, they should be beating Villarreal, but actually still being there in those moments was pretty special and you know, kind of fulfilling, really. So yeah, give it a smudge more than you two, but that's about it.
I love that. 6.5, 6.6 and 6.66.
The little dot.
At least you all agree, I suppose. Yeah, the recurring little thing. Yeah, I remember that from doing algebra at school. Is that even algebra? Probably not. Anyway, let's move on from maths. Next question, Yehuda. How do you see the current plan for the future? Is there a clear idea of how the next few years are supposed to look? Is there a certain candidate to take over next season? And if not, or it doesn't work out, are we facing another roll of the dice with a new manager and a completely new way of playing? Right, let's break it down. Laurie, I'll give you the first section if that's all right. How do you see the plan for the future? And is there a clear idea now of how the next few years should look?
Not sure.
You've answered it.
I think that they basically were planning with Solskjaer, weren't they? You know, that was the idea. That was this is our guy. He gets the club. You know, we're on a sort of good, steady progress, etc., etc. That changed. Ralf Rangnick came in, and now, you know, John Murtagh's relationship with Ralf Rangnick from before, where clearly he understands that he's a smart guy and could be somebody to really benefit United for a number of years. But the whole arrangement is that he's an interim manager until the end of the season. Now, we don't know what's going to happen at the end of that. And I don't actually think Manchester United at the moment have a clear idea of what that's going to be, you know, when it comes to it. Because, you know, as Ralf Rangnick, maybe he was joking a little bit, but equally he did say it in his unveiling press conference. You know, maybe he will do so well that everybody, including himself, go, well, actually, maybe I should continue as the manager. Alternatively, you know, there's Mauricio Pochettino at PSG. What's going to happen with him? Erik ten Hag at Ajax. I don't think, certainly when United were appointing Ralf Rangnick, the word being put out was that they didn't have, it wasn't like it was a fait accompli where they had somebody ready to go once Rangnick stopped being interim manager. It was very much, this is our guy right now. We'll come to the permanent manager in due course. You know, let's see how this goes. He's had three matches, so it's not a big sample size to judge whether he's going to be a success or not. There's been some good bits, but equally, you know, there's certainly been areas to improve. So that's my personal opinion based on, you know, what I'm hearing from people, that I don't think United have a definite direction that they're going to go. I think they would clearly like to have somebody in charge like Ralf Rangnick, you know, or like Mauricio Pochettino or Erik ten Hag, who has a good way of playing and has faith in youth and can develop the academy as well, and had kind of an overarching view of what it means to progress as a club. So that's about it, though. It's sort of broad brushstroke stuff rather than fine detail.
And the second part of the question, Andy, is there a certain candidate to take over next season? And are we potentially looking at a roll of the dice with a new manager and a new way of playing again?
I don't think it's as haphazard as a roll of a dice. I think you look at the names, and Laurie mentioned one in Pochettino or another one in Ten Hag, they would be the most probable candidates, just as Sven-Göran Eriksson was when Sir Alex Ferguson said that he'd step down and he was actually approached and agreed to take the Manchester United job. I think it's all about results. I think if we're 15 games into Ralf Rangnick and United have won 14 matches, he will have all the power. He will have fans and people in the club going, this is the man. He knew exactly what he's doing. And his position, you might think, I quite like this. I'm going to be manager. I'm going to carry on. Or I might anoint a successor. If after 15 games he's won 4, drawn 6 and looking pretty unconvincing, what you'll get is people going, who is this blagger? Who is he even managing? And it'll be like, thanks, but no thanks at the end of the season. And then you bring in one of the names. So I think he's got a chance now to impress, and a lot will be on him. And there will be some patience for a new manager, because I think United fans are pretty patient and they'll get support at the matches. Not really heard his name sang so far. I've heard Ollie's name. So there's this really weird situation at the moment where it's all a bit uncertain on many different levels. I think if United fans can see a clear, discernible style, or if United were to go to some really good teams and beat them, or if United were to win the Champions League, all them things would really strengthen Rangnick's case. But I don't think any decision has been made. And then who is making that decision? What's Ed Woodward going to do? Is he stepping down? Is he going to be a consultant? There's not even clarity about that. Who's making the decision? Who's having influence into making these decisions? What happens to the other guys who interviewed for the interim job? Some of them who made a very good impression. So I don't think the decision's been made. And with Mourinho, I think you could bring it back 3 or 4 months and you knew he was coming. No one would admit to that because it was as close to being watertight as possible. But you just knew. And the club denied it. I remember speaking to someone at the club in the April at West Ham away, and that person said to me, I don't think we'd employ somebody like that. And at that time, Jose Mourinho knew that it was coming to Manchester United. So there'll be lots of smoke and mirrors, but results will play a major factor in the decision.
You mentioned Woodward there, Andy. Vagesh sent us a lot of questions, as you always do, Vagesh. So thank you very much, as always, for doing that. So much so that on our running order today, his name is next to the word highlights because there's so many questions. One of them does actually relate to Ed Woodward though, Laurie, if you wouldn't mind picking this one up. He says, what's going on with Ed Woodward? Have the fine details surrounding his exit been finalised yet? I'm going to add a question at the end of that. Is there even going to be an exit?
Well, this is it. It's now, you know, you get into a grey area of, okay, I'm leaving. I'm not going to be the executive vice chairman anymore, but actually, you know, let's keep me on as a consultant, you know, which seems to be this
Wolf of Wall Street moment, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, well, this is, I mean, and now United will say that as a corporate entity, this happens all the time where chief execs move on and they're kind of retained as a chief exec, as a consultant on a non-exec basis or whatever. I mean, there's certain people at the Premier League that would very much like Richard Scudamore to still be engaged as a consultant. I think he probably does have, you know, sort of a line in there, but, you know, with all the disharmony they've had, you know, in terms of different questions and what have you, his experience, I think a lot of people would have felt would have been vital. Ed Woodward, you know, clearly knows the club inside out and has relationships with certain agents and certain other sporting directors at other clubs in terms of doing deals. Clearly, he was involved with the deals that got done last summer. But now I would argue that, you know, the whole point of him stepping down was because the Super League, you know, plot basically, and, you know, he, you know, collaborated to get that done in a kind of secret way. And then the whole idea was that he would step down out of principle because he couldn't support it ultimately in some kind of weird way. But now he's now perhaps going to stay on, which I don't know, just makes it confusing for me as to how those things align. Now, yeah, so I don't know. I think the idea that, you know, perhaps I don't think he will fully step away because I think there's, you know, he's obviously been at the club for such a long time and the Glazers have that trust with him that they would like to see, you know, what he can still do for the club. But I think that makes it, I think there needs to be a clear direction there though, you know, who is going to take over from him. If it is Richard Arnold, which we think it is, what's his exact role going to be? What is the exact role of John Murta as the football director and then Darren Fletcher as the technical director going to be? Because I think there has been, you know, a lack of clarity over those situations and what each of their responsibilities are at the moment. And as you say, if you're then going to try and pick another manager, that clearly needs to be from, you know, a considered strong kind of voice. I don't think I have a full answer there, Vagi. Sorry for sort of myself being a bit cloudy, but that's all we've got at the moment.
Yeah, the Wolf of Warwick Road. Does that work? Could that be in the intro when you eventually write what's happening with Woodward's future, Laurie?
I like, well, great film. So yeah, anything that doffs a cap to Leonardo DiCaprio in that kind of wild ride. I think Ed's a different character to to Julian Buffont. What's he called? The guy that's in it.
I don't know, but that sounded, if you just stuck with that, I wouldn't have disagreed, to be fair. It sounded right.
Listen, if Margaret Robbie wants to walk down Warwick Road, then there's ample opportunity for her to sell United We Stand. I'll put that on the record now. There's a clear job offer there. All we need is games to sell it at.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Andy, we're going to doff our cap to chapeau. Let's do a chapeau of the week. I said we were going to do it on the last podcast, didn't I? So, right, chapeau of the week is to your article, Andy. about the coaching staff, because obviously it's become even more exasperated by the departure now of Kieran McKenna and Martin Pert as well. But you've listed across this calendar year the amount of talent that United have lost. And in those first sort of couple of paragraphs, you list who's left. Nicky Butt, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Michael Carrick, Kieran McKenna, Martin Pert, Casey Stoney. In terms of the situation now with United, there are some questions on this as well, which I'll get to in a minute. Where does it leave United, Pert and McKenna leaving, first of all?
First of all, can I say that chapeau is what cyclists say to each other all the time?
Is it?
That's when, yeah, it's a big cycling term. That, go on, chapeau. Not the fella who was asking me about Ronaldo. He didn't do it to me.
He's not a chapeau, is he? He's a chapeau.
Chapeau is massive in cycling. Where does it leave? Well, I've written an article and I've got good sources for writing it. We've done our job properly. Not a popular article to write at all, because at the moment, everything's going to be perfect under Ralph. He's the new manager and everything could be great. Whereas Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and some of his coaches around him will be associated with failure. The facts are that Ralph Rangnick wanted to keep Michael Carrick, wanted to keep Kieran McKenna, Martin Pert, and they've gone. So they're the facts. So you can say whether they're good or bad at the job, and I'm told that they're good at the job. That's not a unanimous opinion. But clearly Kieran McKenna, who's going to take the Ipswich job and take Martin Pert with him, is perceived to be a talented young coach. Will he be a great manager? Well, that's not for Manchester United. He's 35 years old. He's never managed a senior man's side. What it means for Manchester United is, on a day-to-day basis, there's been significant changes on the coaching pitch. When Ralph Rangnick came in, he was going to work in this sort of hybrid situation for a number of reasons, one being Brexit, one being the fact that it was mid-season, one being the fact that some of the coaches he'd like to bring in were already in employment. And that is now changing. So he's brought in one coach and he's brought in a very small staff around him, which he said he would do at the start. So you've got players working with new staff. And United have lost a lot of the people who've been there. And I'm not on about the manager. I can understand completely why Ollie lost his job. I can understand why people might say good riddance when you mention all of those names that have been mentioned. What I'm saying is there have been significant changes on a day-to-day basis. None of this matters if Manchester United start winning matches again. Ralph will be hailed with a big chapeau. You are the absolute man. You know exactly what you're doing. But I speak to people, and I know Laurie does as well, who know what's going on underneath the bonnet on a day-to-day basis, and there's been significant changes. Ralph Rangnick had a good early relationship with Kieran McKenna. They both obsessed about coaching and the finer details, and these are the people who were taking coaching. And one example I gave in the piece, Martin Pert, he doesn't really have a profile. He was the guy who was the main contact for a lot of the players who were out on loan, and now he's gone. So who did they ring? He was a linguist who would train the players who not made the match day squad. So there's changes going on, and some good might come from this. And some people who might not be happy that coaches have gone, well, their noses might have been put out of joint. And being a disruptor might not be a bad thing either. And Ralph Rangnick might come in and raise the levels across the board. But what I know is that as we speak in December 2021, there are big changes going underway, and not all of them are as Manchester United planned, because they thought that the coaches like Kieran would be staying around and not leaving mid-season. You cannot blame him for going. You couldn't blame Brian Kidd for going to Blackburn Rovers, not only for financial reasons, but coaches are not really, really well paid. You go and manage a club like Ipswich, who had 29,000 on Saturday against Sunderland. That is a massive, massive job. You can't blame him for taking his own man. And this happens in football all the time. David Moyes, I quoted this example in the article. When he came in, he was strongly criticised for getting rid of people like Eric Steele, Rennie Meulensteen, Mike Phelan. And this just happens in football. That's the way it is with benchmen. Managers take their assistants with them. Will it be right? We don't know. We just don't know. But as a journalist, it's my job to report on what's happening.
Okay. I mean, that was a very comprehensive answer. So, Sharif, there was a question in there on the coaches, but I think Andy answered it there. If you want to know more, of course, about the situation, have a look at Andy's article. It's up on The Athletic at the minute. Very, very comprehensive, the article, as well as his answer there. So, also detail this morning from David Ornstein that Jesse Lingard is choosing not to leave Manchester United in January. He wants to stay again and fight for his first team place. Of course, he's out of contract in the summer. There's a question relating to this, Laurie, if you wouldn't mind taking it on. Tom says, can you see United replacing Mata, Cavani, Pogba and Lingard, as well as strengthening the first 11? I'm presuming he's meaning across the next two windows, because for January, that'd be quite a lot of work, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I can't see January offering a great deal of movement. It's always a difficult window. The issue with Jesse Lingard was clearly he's got 6 months left on his contract, and there was obviously clubs that might want to use him for that second half of the season, and he'd be an excellent addition. You know, certainly you look at Newcastle, you know, they've obviously got a bit of money to spend now, so could he be enticed to go up there? The word from David Ornstein in his column is that actually no, Jesse Lingard would rather stay at Manchester United, fight for his place under Ralph Rangnick, who you can see how there's a synergy there, you know, with the way that he wants players to close down. That's been a huge part of his coaching since he's come in, you know, the fact that getting the ball back quickly, and Jesse Lingard clearly at his best is great at that kind of stuff. He sort of lost his way a little bit under Solskjaer at one point for that, but, you know, back at West Ham and then at times this season when he's been given a chance, I know it's only been a few times, he's looked really good, both in possession and out of possession. So, you know, you could see how he could possibly work as one of those two number 10s if, you know, Ralph Rangnick does indeed continue with the 4-2-2-2. I would have to check myself when I say that. I always put an extra two in there somewhere. But yes, I mean, listen, that's his prerogative. If he wants to stay, you know, he probably will get more chances if he left and went somewhere else. But actually, he equally will probably be able to get, if he does ultimately leave, a better deal, you know, more options as a free agent in the summer. So why would he, you know, jeopardise himself by moving now? And equally, you never know. There might still be a contract offer that comes from United that he goes, yeah, actually, I'll agree to that. You know, at the moment, that isn't the case. You know, he's not happy with the terms that have been proposed. I think, as anybody would do in this situation who's fit and healthy, waiting to see what they could get at the end of the season when they are a free agent is probably the smart move.
Yeah, let's move it on then. That's, again, a very comprehensive answer. Last question then, Ramazan. About the goalkeeping situation. And you've written an article as well, Andy, that was up on The Athletic, I think on Friday. It's been there for a few days now. If people want to go and have a look at it, it's about David De Gea, basically. It's about the fact that whenever Manchester United struggle, he seems to end up winning individual awards. And also about the competition that Dean Henderson has offered him and how that's brought the best out in David De Gea as well. Really interesting article. Big issue for Manchester United at the minute is Henderson's future, it seems now. Ramazan's question relates to that, Andy. If Henderson leaves in January, what will happen to De Gea? Will he keep his level or relax and return to that 2021 form, which of course saw him lose his place in the team to Henderson? Something else which is detailed in that article of yours, Andy.
It's a good question, and what you'd hope would happen is not what happened last time. David De Gea's training dropped off, and Dean Henderson, although he won't fully be appreciated for doing this, is a major reason why David De Gea is doing so well. Because David knew that Sergio Romero, while individually when he came up and was popular with United fans, wasn't going to be selected over a long period of time. And if you know that, if you know that you're number one, then consciously or subconsciously, your levels dropped. And I'm told that they did drop. I'm told that this season, he's been training much, much better. That the goalkeepers who are there at the moment, they're all grafters. They've been around the block. Not just on the pitch, but in the gym as well. You got Tom Heaton, you got Lee Grant, Matic, the young goalkeeper, and Dean Henderson as well. With De Gea, that piece is largely positive. There are a few doubts about him, saying where he could still improve. Coming out of his area, sometimes there are doubts about whether he's physical enough. That's not my opinion. That's me speaking to people who know far, far more than I do. I spoke to four different people as part of that article on and off the record, and it was a broadly positive piece about David De Gea because it was written after Norwich, where he was man of the match. Well, why was he man of the match? Partly because Norwich was so good and kept cutting through Manchester United. But I think De Gea's stock is much higher now than it was at the start of last season when he was making those mistakes. Dean Henderson doesn't want to be a number two anywhere, and you can understand that. as a Manchester United fan, I'm concerned that the level of the goalkeeper stays at where it is at the moment. And if he goes, who is there to challenge him? Tom Heaton, great pro. He's not David De Gea's level. The other lads are not either. The other lads have been looking to go out on loan or coming back. So a top club should want two really good goalkeepers. It's easy for us to say that. It's not easy when you're a number one and you're being used as a number two.
No, very true. Right, let's round it off then with one last question. Nick Hayes asked, lowest and highest points of 2021. Well, considering this is the last question of the last normal podcast of 2021, forget the lowest. We've done enough doom and gloom, haven't we? Just one moment then. The highest point of 2021, watching Manchester United, Laurie Whitwell.
I think probably, you know, just because I was in the stands and I know it doesn't mean much, you know, if United then go out in the next round, but the late winner against Atalanta, just because it was a pretty desperate situation, looked like United were going to get hammered, and clearly Paul Scholes called it right when a few days later they did get hammered at Old Trafford playing the same way. But in that actual moment, you know, European night under the floodlights, you know, Ronaldo basically just determined not to lose or to kind of not, you know, slip into the Europa League. When it felt quite pivotal, you know, I know progression in the Champions League isn't the barometer by which United should gauge success, you know, just getting out the group stage, but I think it was a special night, you know, electric atmosphere, players playing, you know, for the club, you know, at that point for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and, you know, it was a thrilling match, great end-to-end stuff and a great occasion. So probably I'd go for that as a high point.
Andy?
I think the best two results were Liverpool at home in the FA Cup at the start of the year and Manchester City away in the league. But that's nonsense because, as Laurie says, if you're there and the stadium is full and both those games were played behind closed doors, so great results. But if Laurie's going to go with Atalanta at home, I'll go with Villarreal at home. Similar circumstances. They were the better team in the first half. Villarreal away was a better result, but Villarreal was so good against United in that first half at Old Trafford, and to get that late winner from Ronaldo, the old of the Stretford end, bouncing, singing Viva Ronaldo, that was brilliant. At that point, I thought, all right, we're not going back into the Europa League. It's not as clear-cut as I felt at half-time. There's been a lot of good moments when you look back at individual matches, but those two. Laurie's right with Atalanta. And what about you, Ian?
Well, I sort of touched on it before, didn't I, with Varane. I don't think I can look past that day against Leeds. While you were giving your answer there, Andy, I just looked back at my Instagram post from that day. What a sight this was. Stands packed with fans, from the pre-match buzz to the surprise unveiling of Varane, the celebration of five goals. That was one of the best days at Old Trafford in years. I took this picture after full time as we were waiting to do the post-match interviews, and barely a single supporter had left this corner of the stadium. No one was desperate to beat the traffic yesterday. They were still singing as loud as during the game, which made me trying to speak to the players and hear their answers almost impossible. It was brilliant. I don't think I can look past that day. The opening day of the season, fans back in the stadium, five goals against Leeds. It was absolutely fantastic. And all that without Ronaldo. He just added a bit of fairy dust, didn't he, in the weeks after that. So, yeah, I think Manchester United 5, Leeds United 1, which at the time as well looked like a brilliant result. Since then, Leeds have struggled a little bit, haven't they? But, yeah, I'm going to go for that. Right, OK, that's it then for our podcast today, Talk of the Devils, and that's it for our Q&A as well. Thank you so much, everyone, for sending your questions in to Laurie. And of course, thank you as well for getting involved with this right across the year on Talk of the Devils. It's been a brilliant year for the podcast. It's gone from strength to strength. And a big part of that is how much you guys have got involved, how engaged you've been with it, and the feedback that you've given us at every stage has been absolutely brilliant as well. So thank you all for listening across this year. We will be back with one more podcast before the year is out, because one man has dominated Manchester United's history over the past 30 years. And on the 31st of December, we are going to celebrate his 80th birthday. Yes, Sir Alex Ferguson is 80. To mark the occasion, we've asked the Athletic's big guns to dig into his legacy, and we'll have a special podcast episode featuring some of those writers talking to us about a man who has stood astride British and European football as it transformed beyond recognition. A real tribute to him, and a podcast very much to look forward to. That'll be great fun to make, I'm sure, and I'm hoping it'll be a great listen as well, and you'll be able to download that podcast from Boxing Day. But for now, Andy, thank you very much for being with us on Talk of the Devils across this year. Laurie, thank you to you as well. And we'll see you again. Well, we'll see you on the next podcast, but we'll see you again in 2022. Let's hope that we've got some brilliant matches from Manchester United, or even some average matches. Any matches will do right now, won't they, after the crisis of the last couple of weeks. But thank you all for listening to this one and all of our podcasts across 2021. And we'll see you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.